Hi, I'm Kat Lecoq, and you're listening to the Share Impact podcast. Made by and for female social entrepreneurs around the world. In each episode, I interview a female social entrepreneur about their journey, their business, and what they've learned along the way. Hopefully to inspire you to follow your dreams and pursue the social or environmental impact that you want to create in the world too. Hope you enjoy. So welcome back to the Share Impact podcast. I'm really pleased to have Stella Araldi from 22 Stars. Welcome, Stella.
Hi, thank you for the invitation.
No, it's fantastic. It's fantastic to have you here. So Stella is the founder and social impact nomad of 22 Stars. So let's get started first, Stella, and tell us a little bit about what a social impact nomad is, because I'm not sure many listeners will know that.
Yes, great. So actually, social impact nomad is like the mix between a digital nomad and a social entrepreneur, a social worker. So to give you some background, a digital nomad is someone who works behind their laptop and doesn't have like a fixed home base. So that's my case. I'm basically already traveling around since 10 years, 2008. I studied international law and human rights, so that brought me also to development organizations all around the world. I worked in China and also in the Dutch Caribbean. And I studied in Spain and in Italy and the Netherlands, so I've always been around a lot. And my family is also from all over. Mm-hmm. But then since a couple of years, when I decided to start my own thing, 22 Stars, I soon realized that having an apartment in Amsterdam would just give me like additional costs and a huge burden. And since my project is based in Uganda, I also have to be regular in Uganda, but I don't like to be there 12 months a year. So then I'm not in Uganda. I'm just, with my friends from the digital nomad community or my family. Yeah, it could be anywhere. So I don't have a fixed place because, my social jewelry web shop and also the foundation, I can run all of that from my laptop.
Fantastic. No, that's brilliant. Thanks for that. Yeah. I think that'll be really helpful for people to understand. Yeah. And also a really great way to think about how you can run a social enterprise from anywhere. You don't have to have a fixed space. So tell us a little bit about what 22 Stars is and why you set it out.
Yeah, so since I'm actually like a little child myself, I was always really involved in like making the world like a better place. It's probably because when I was a kid, like I moved from Germany to the Netherlands because my parents separated. And then as a child, I got teased a lot with my German accent and people would sometimes say like nasty things to me. Then I moved again to another village. So as a kid, it was always a bit like being in between worlds and sometimes not having a voice. So when I started with my law studies, I was always into children's rights because I really wanted to give kids a voice. And I was also very much into conflict solutions and conflict studies. So I did my master's in international humanitarian law and I focused on girl child soldiers in Uganda. And I went in 2009 to Uganda to do research about this topic. And I interviewed a lot of women. They were all living in an internally displaced camp in Kampala. And they already made like incredible products from recycled paper. So I was really impressed by their artistic skills and also really touched by their stories. So once I went back home to my university, I started selling their products to my friends and family, but I was not like an official business. I just did it like, for fun and to send like the money back to the women. And at the same time, I also got involved with SIFE. I don't know if you ever heard about them. They're called Students in Free Enterprise. And with them, you really learn that the best way to help people out of poverty is that they become self-sustainable. So that's kind of like where my entrepreneurship part started. Because obviously, studying law is not the most entrepreneurial thing on earth you can do.
Yeah.
But then after my law studies, I did a second master in human rights and democratization from the European Inter-University Center. So that was like interdisciplinary master. So it was focused also a lot on development aid, but also like the legal aspect. So that also brought me to China, where I worked for the European Union delegation. But what I really missed was field work, like really working directly with the women, because now I was always sitting in like a really gray office and I had like a lot of contact with NGOs and organizations, but I never really talked a lot with the people directly. And I also had the feeling that a lot of stuff was very bureaucratic and not efficient. And I sometimes also had my doubts about how the money was spent on certain projects. And like I already mentioned, like I went to Uganda in 2009 for the first time. So I still had my contacts over there. And I still every year order jewelry from the women to support them. I guess especially because I was writing about them for more than a year. I think if I just would have volunteered in Uganda and then I would have gone back home, then it's just like a too big thing, you know. You're really touched while you're in Uganda, but then you go back home and you go back into your own rhythm and you, forget about them. But I was sitting in this library writing down the most horrible stories, actually. Also my second master, I wrote about child victims and witnesses participating at the International Criminal Court. So it was actually not just like 1 year of master writing, but like 2 years that I was constantly. So I guess that's why it completely just got into my bones. And also when I was in Uganda, whoever has been to Uganda can, I guess, only confirm this, is that people are just so sweet and so nice and so generous and happy that I was also... just so amazed by the people in Uganda that I really said, like, I want to help those people because they're also so nice to me and they're really people that I want to succeed in life. So hence, in end of 2012, I decided to go back to Uganda because I was in between jobs and I didn't really knew where to go, what to do. So I went to Uganda to see how the women were doing. And then to my surprise, one of the women that I spoke to, Susan Laker, initially, she was not speaking any English at all. So we had like a translator to help us. But then she told me like with a big smile that she went back to school herself with the money like she got from me. And then she started learning English. And I was just so amazed because, I don't know, I went back to Uganda and I thought like, well, who knows? Maybe my contact person never ever gave the money to the women or you know what I mean? Like you're always like suspicious. You never know. What's going on there? And then, it's my big astonishment. Like I really saw the women and they told me like, the impact that this little money made on them. Because back in the days, it was really not much. I think I said I bought jewelry for maybe something between 500 and 800 euros, you know, which is like really nothing. But for women who live from $1 a day, it's like a huge difference. So then in 2013, I decided to start Tenny Two Stars, the social jewelry business, to help them to find like a larger market for the products and to help them with the designs, the marketing, everything. But then I also found out that I actually knew nothing. I had like a law background. I really didn't know anything. But then I participated in a 3 month course from the startup campus in Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. It's not for social enterprises. It's just like any enterprise. But I mean, I think it doesn't really matter if you're social or not. Like you all have the same challenges and you all have to start the same. So in that startup campus, I really learned a lot from testing your product to pricing it, finding the right customers, doing your branding, everything. Then at the end of 2013, finally our website became live and we launched it. But of course, I still also needed to finance myself. So then for a lot of my friends, I really made like a strange switch because I started working for Calvin Klein and they were all like, but you were always like in human rights and why the heck would you work for Calvin Klein? And I was like, well, it was just like a job opportunity that came into my path. And I was like, well, actually, they have like a huge online store and I was doing like the, customer service and also the trainings for the people from the German online stores, so because I also speak German. So I was doing like German, Dutch, English for them. And it was actually really great because we got to know everything from them. Like how do they do their collections, their photo shoots, the different product sections they have. So I really had a feeling that I got paid for having like a free school of learning. And with them, like I also really learned a lot. And then I was doing 20 to stars in the weekends and in the evenings. But then at one point I kind of like started feeling like burned out, like either I stopped 20 to stars or really go for it. And then I realized that I don't really, you know, have to live in the Netherlands, that a lot of my work, I do it from my laptop. And of course it's important for me that I go also regularly to Uganda to meet the women in person and see how they are doing and to also understand their situation. But then I also think it's really important to also understand again the Western world. Because sometimes I see people who only live in Uganda. But I think if you are only in Uganda, it's really easy to just get used to the African rhythm. And then you also sometimes forget how customers think in Europe. So I think it's quite important to really have both worlds. So that's why I decided to not move to Uganda. But I'm still like, officially living in the Netherlands. I'm also, a couple of times a year I am in the Netherlands. But I'm not in the Netherlands. I'm... with Ugandan people, with the digital nomads, because then after my Uganda trip, I was doing a photo shoot in Cape Town for our new summer collection. And that's where I, for the first time, run into digital nomads, because I felt quite lonely. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have colleagues anymore. I was only by myself and my computer. And then I run into those digital nomads who have all types of jobs. And that was super helpful because also many of them, they have like skills that they have to share with me, like SEO, setting up newsletters, all of those useful things. So,
So is that why you sort of, because I think that's fascinating that you're able, and I don't think we've had many people on the podcast that have that kind of digital nomad kind of lifestyle. And I think it's really great. And it's a really great model if it works for you to kind of, you are a true international. You're kind of doing your photo shoot in South Africa. Your business is based in Uganda. You also run and operate yourself from the Netherlands, but currently you're in London at our office.
Yes.
The importance you set on not just being located in one place, particularly when you have an international reach for your business, because you can learn so much more by being in different
places. Yeah, exactly. Especially like because I'm not working like from home alone. Like right now, like I'm sitting in this co-working space with other people, and not everyone is a nomad. You also have like, of course, freelancers here or small businesses, startups. And in the coffee breaks, you talk to each other. And that's really great because you can get so much knowledge from each other.
Mm-hmm. So is that why you set up? We'll come back to 22 Stars in a minute, but is that why you set up? I saw you have a workation coming up in Uganda.
True.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So I started a social vacation actually because I really started feeling lonely again in Uganda. Because I was so used that when I'm not in Uganda, I always was surrounded by those like-minded people, even in the Netherlands. When my friends were working 9 to 5, I always found some digital nomad who also happened to be in Amsterdam and who wanted to work with me from like a coffee place or if the weather was nice, who said also like, you know what, let's go to the beach. We will work in the evening. So really flexible. But then when I was in Uganda, like most of my friends in Uganda were expats. Well, they're not digital nomads, so they all work 9 to 5. Then also most of the expats, they live maybe 1 or 2 years in Uganda and then they leave. So every time when I came back to Uganda, I found out that most of my friends were already gone again. Then I obviously hang out a lot of the Ugandan people. So I have a lot of Ugandan friends. But it's sometimes also like challenging because, of course, like I'm used to go to nice restaurants and spend a lot of money. And then I have to invite them, which I do like a lot. But, of course, I can also not invite my friends every single night with me. And then I actually realized that all my digital nomads, they're super flexible. They can work from anywhere. So then I was thinking like, what if I just make sure that my digital nomad friends have a reason to come to Uganda? And it also was that a lot of the digital nomads started sponsoring a child of mine from the foundation, because that's what I started after the social journey business. I'll come back to that later. So then also those digital nomads asked me like, hey, Stella, can we actually come to Uganda? Can we sponsor a child? But yeah, we have to work. How does Uganda look like internet? How does Uganda look like co-working spaces? What's the food like? So there's so many questions. And actually, sometimes they seem to be less independent as I thought they would be. Because you always think a digital nomad is someone who's completely independent, has traveled the world, which is true. But at the same time, they also have clients. Yeah. So if they go to a country and then the electricity stops working and they will miss their important calls the next day, it could really ruin their business. It could really mean that they lose clients. Because they're not coming on a holiday to Uganda, they come there, but they still have their own working commitments. So then I found out that they actually really like it if they come and if they know that there's someone who's organizing everything for them. So that's the whole concept of the social vacation. I did last year 1 to 5 of them in like March, July, August, and October. And this year I only did one in March and I'm going to do one end of August. And the reason is because at one point I also thought it was a bit too much because when I have the vacation participant over, it's literally that I'm like 3 weeks full time only focused on them and I have like less time for myself. So that's why I brought it down to just 2 vacations a year. Yeah, so during the social vacation, like people work on their own projects, of course. But then in their free time, I show them like around, like we have like mastermind sessions, also with the local entrepreneurs twice a week. Yeah, we visit my project so that they really learn how we set up everything, how it works with the small business trainings, how the school look like, how the education system is in Uganda, just all the challenges, just everything. And then also we have like coaching sessions with me. So if people want to start their own social enterprise or they're already halfway through it, I sit down with them. There's a lot of people that have similar ideas or projects, but then not for Uganda, but for Colombia or for Tanzania or for Kenya. So I also really help them to set up something similar to what I'm doing, but then in their own country. We have like offline weekend to completely disconnect the national park. This year, it happens that the East African Festival takes place, Nyege Nyege. So we're also going there.
Yeah, wow. Sounds brilliant.
Yeah, so we have like a really like a big program, but also like enough time for people to really do their own calls. Although I must say that usually like the people who come to Uganda, they don't plan on working like full days. They already take into account that they will be in a new country, culture shocked, and just work like a couple of hours a day.
Yeah.
And then of course it's also up to everyone. We also have people who are not really a digital nomad. So in their case, they came to Uganda and when the digital nomads are working on their own things, they ask me for help with our stuff, which is also actually quite nomadic. So even though we do run a volunteer program in Uganda, I would say it's more like a nomadic volunteer program because most of the things you can help us with for the foundation is stuff like writing a blog for us or creating nice images on the canvas for our social media or creating our designs for the flyers or with our website. So a lot of volunteer work is actually nomadic because we have like our Ugandan local people who we hire to give the business trainings, like Nicholas, for example, Ugandan guy that we just added to the group. So my opinion, I don't really need to get like a foreigner to come to Uganda to teach us English. We also have English teachers in Uganda, which I can hire. But of course, people can give workshops. And if people are in Uganda and they want to volunteer, they can always give the kids after school like an English rehearsal class, something like that, of course. But
That's so cool. It's like lots going on,
man.
And the
vacation
is 3 weeks?
Yes, 3 weeks. Yeah. And then people can stay longer if they like.
Brilliant. Yeah. So you were talking a little bit at the start there about the foundation. So tell us a little bit more about what that is and how you set that up and why.
Yeah, exactly. So, what happened with the social jewelry business, I think we talked in private about it, right? Not yet on the podcast. Yeah. So what happened was that in the beginning, I had like some social programs set up for the women, like helping them also to set up like a small business. So they would not be dependent on me and my jewelry sales. Mm-hmm. And then we also had like some dancing programs for them because also many of the women are traumatized because they fled from the war, they're illiterate. So also like the healing process is really important for them. There was one important aspect that in the beginning I didn't really took into account, and that was the saving groups. And also, like, we always take a lot of knowledge for granted. Like, we know that our big sales is in December, and that if we want to have our products in shops, that, we need to get started during the summer holiday, and then in September, October, we already need to be basically in every single shop. So we know that. But of course, how should the women in Uganda know that? So what happened was that in December, the women asked me for more orders. And I was like, guys, like, now we have like all our stock, we have to start selling for the Christmas collection. So there are no new orders at the moment. And then I usually just give them like some basic necklaces or bracelets to make, because these are products that you always have in our web shop. So they have something to do. But yeah, not that much. And I thought that they earned enough money, you know, to send their kids to school. But then there was also like a misconception from my side. So there are a lot of misconceptions, you know, from both sides. Because, yeah, I forgot that a woman doesn't just take care of herself and her kids and like only their needs. But yeah, the women also have to take care about their parents, the sick sister, the sick brother. So when they earn money, like, before they know it, like, the money is gone within like a day, because they, yeah, if your brother is dying, of course you cannot not do anything. So you have to pay for the operation in the hospital. For them, like, yeah, the money was already gone. And then, yeah, the kids, they were supposed to go back to school like in January, but there was like no money for it. So many of them would just stay home, mm-hmm. because the school sends them back if there is no money for the fees. And that made me really sad. And I was at a conference for digital nomads. It's called the Nomad Cruise. And I was like, yeah, sharing with them my story about how I set my up my social enterprise. So how you actually also can run an a social online store for good. So not just for your own profit and benefit, but also to help others with. And everyone was like congratulating me on the great idea and like, oh, you must do like an amazing job. And actually my face was a bit like this, because I really felt bad, because I knew that so many of the women were still not able to send their kids to school. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I was always like trying to tell people, buy a necklace and then the women can educate their kids. And then I knew that so many of them would not go to school because the money was already spend on other things. And then in my audience, a couple of men came to me and they said to me like, hey, how much does it cost to send that little boy to school? And I was like, I don't know, but I will find out for you. Before I knew it, I found like long-term sponsors and I started a GoFundMe campaign to raise like extra donation money for the kids. By the end of the year, we had like the first 100 kids in school. Mm-hmm. I set up a real foundation. Yeah, because I realized that, but at least we took now the burden away, that they don't have to worry anymore about the school fees of their kids and the uniforms. So we take care of that. Yeah, and for that, like, I started this whole foundation because, I mean, even like with the social jewelry profits, like, I would never ever be able to send 300 kids to school, because then I have to sell like a million of necklaces and bracelets.
So if the foundation is set up separately and it's
Separately.
Yes. More that people just can donate to that.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And I chose to keep it separate because, like, with the social jewelry business, yeah, as you also already explained very well in the Share Impact website, well, we also need to kind of like live from something. I also cannot live from there, but I'm not taking anything from the foundation or from the donations from the kids. So that goes like 100% to the children. Mm-hmm. So the way that I also earn some money is, so first of all, I also have like a house in the Netherlands, which I rent out. So of course that always gives me the security net that I always know that, yeah, I have something to fall back onto. But then also with the jewelry, of course, like I put like a lot of my own time and energy in making the designs. Yeah, so from that, like, I can also take something from the profit. But not just that, like, with the social jewelry, you also have, like, a lot of costs. You know, like, I take, like, really professional product pictures. I have, like, professional models for the photo shoots, marketing, all of that. And I seriously don't know how I should have done that if I would have incorporated the jewelry into the foundation. Because, I mean, I cannot really use, like, the money from a sponsor to pay off an extremely expensive photo shoot, you know?
Yeah,
and sometimes also when I see, like, that foundations sell, like, you get a jewelry products on their foundation website, I'm always looking at it a bit with, like, you know, because I'm always thinking, like, that their pictures actually look like shit. And they usually don't have, like, any new designs. I really believe and think that you can like set up a better brand if you separate those things and don't make it one thing.
And I suppose they also have slightly different purposes. Although you're supporting the children of the women that you provide employment for or support the employment for, they are two separate purposes, aren't they? The jewelry business is supporting women into entrepreneurship, so jewelry making and having their own businesses, where the foundation is very much supporting the children to be educated.
Yeah. Both. So actually the foundation does not only support the kids. We have like 5 programs in it. It's a small business program, which is separate from the jewelry program. So the small business program really focuses on businesses, because the social jewelry, of course, is also really dependent on me and the Western market, and goes up and down. While like local business, like tailoring, selling vegetables, all of these type of businesses, they are like way more consistent for the women. So besides like the children, we also have those programs of the families. Because quite soon I realized that, if the kids come home after school on holidays and they don't have food or they don't have a mattress to sleep on, and the families, the dads, they get jealous because they're like, my kid gets an education, but I also want an education and I don't get anything, you know, because also quite often like their generation, like their parents, they were the one who actually suffered most during times of war, because they all are illiterate, you know. So then we also started looking at like, how can we like educate actually also the parents? So some of them, they also wanted to go back to adult school, but not all of them. So then we also started this whole like entrepreneur training. So Nicholas, he did like the trainings for us, and now we gave out like the microloans, and we have like our local project managers who like monitoring the impact and the process. And when I'm back in again, I'm going to talk to Nicholas again, like how we can make this project even bigger than it is right now.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Exciting. So Stella, it sounds like you're achieving huge success both in the jewelry business and with the foundation. What top tips have you got to share with other social entrepreneurs to kind of
My top tip is, I think I would say like go with the flow, and really like start, because I remember like that my first years, for example, I was so fixed on my business plan. You know, my business plan had to be like every single detail. And then when I was going on, then I actually realized that a lot of stuff I changed in my business plan, you know. And also with my target group, initially I only focused on women, and now with the foundation I also found out that a lot of men are interested in helping us start and test your product and your model. Because when I, for example, started with the GoFundMe campaign, I didn't have a foundation. I had literally nothing. And then on my own 22 Stars website for the jewelry, I just created like a one pager in which I would upload the profiles of the kids, just a picture, and saying they need a sponsor. You know, it looked like completely unprofessional, but it worked. Like apparently, like a lot of people, wanted to sponsor a kid. And now, of course, like I have like an officially registered foundation. I have like an official website. But don't think that you first need to have the perfect website before you start with your idea or your product.
Yeah,
because also
that's so important.
You
can almost waste so much time trying to get a perfect website or a perfect business plan, and then when you get started, you realize you don't want to, or it doesn't work that way, and you need a completely different website or a completely different business plan.
Like,
it's really, we've had other people talk about that in terms of like having a lean methodology at the start and just kind of going with it and seeing how it develops. And it's not to not have any plan, but to sort of follow a bit of a plan. Flexible to the change and the learning that's obviously going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And also like, just don't say you don't have time now. Just start now, like with little things, and nothing has to be perfect, you know. So or on your way, you can always like adjust things.
I think it's really, really helpful advice, because we often think we need to be able to dedicate all our time, but actually we can just take very small steps, start talking about it, find the connections, you know, learn along the way as well for ourselves, and you can still be doing that while you've got another job.
Because also the same with the products. At one point I had like also really big baskets and handbags in my collection, but then I realized that the shipping costs were incredibly high, so that product, for example, completely didn't work for me. I don't really do them anymore. I really focus more on the bracelets and the necklaces, which are like really lightweight, because of course a lot of my clients are nomads like I am, so they don't like to wear like big heavy jewelry, but like stuff that is easy to put in your suitcase and travel with. Yeah, that's the same thing. Like, you will find also out what type of products your client wants after you interview them, after you talk to them. And what for me was really useful was my first year I spent every weekend at the market in Amsterdam selling my product. And it was not that I really sold products and I had to earn money with, because your costs are also quite high. So it was more like break even and to really do market research, because then people did not buy my products. I asked them, like, what did you not like about it? Was it too expensive or was it too cheap? Or do you think there's already enough jewelry on this market? Or if you think like our story is not clear at all, you know, so that really works actually the best. Just go out there and ask customers about your product.
Brilliant. No, thank you. That's really, really helpful.
Yeah.
So just to wrap up then, just going back to right at the start, when we were talking about the 22 stars and the jewelry, the business, I'd really love to hear some of the stories or the change that you've created with some of those. What are the things that they've seen change?
So in addition to that, like, we also had, thankfully, like, three women who left the husband because their husband was quite abusive. And they always used to be in a very dependent situation, dependent on his money, his work, everything. And thanks to our support, because we came over and the jewelry, they really became independent. So they could move out of the house together with the kids and just be like, hey, now I'm a strong woman myself and I can take care of myself and my kids. Those changes were like really important, but also them being like more like a community again, have something to celebrate. Because before the 20 stars jewelry, a lot of them, they didn't had really hope anymore, or more negative energy. And now because the kids come together every single week, like also like the parents, they come together to make music and dance and really also keep their own traditional dances and customs alive, because they live in Asholi quarters, which is hands like an internally displaced camp in Kampala, but they all come from North Uganda. So they have their own culture, their own language, own traditions. And yeah, they really keep it alive and feel like more like dignity. So that they not just like hand up their hand and they get stuff for free. They really, feel more proud of themselves, that also the kids see that their parents are doing something. And of course for them, like, education is like the number one key. Because many of the people like we work with are extremely ill. Many of them are HIV positive or have other diseases. There was like a lady who wanted to set up a hospital in this area because she used to be a nurse. But then everyone was like, we don't want a hospital. Like, we rather die tomorrow because we have nothing to live for. Our kids don't go to school. So why should we continue living? Because they will have the same miserable life. And the people said, what we actually want instead of a hospital is education, a school. So then this lady, meeting point, like, her name is Rose, she built up like one of the first nice schools in Asholi quarter. But of course, like, the school is not free. I mean, the building is super nice that they sponsored all of that, but then we still have to pay for the uniforms and the school fee. Amazing to hear that education that they really care about.
Mm-hmm. No, I think
that really changes lives.
Really interesting and really useful for people to hear in terms of it is a cultural difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mindset difference, I think, when you don't live in that situation to understand where people's priorities and needs are.
Yeah, and then also some of our artisans, they went back actually to North Uganda. So they really like saved up some money to go back, buy land, build up a house, because they really wanted to live closer to their family again and the original roots where they were coming from. But again, for everyone, it's different. Some people prefer to stay in Kampala because they're already displaced since more than 20 years. And others, they do want to go back. So,
No, really, really interesting. And I do actually have one more question, because it sounds like you do so much stuff, Stella. And I'm sure lots of listeners will be interested to know. And one of the questions I get a lot, asked a lot about in my community, is about productivity and like time management. And how do we achieve all these things when there's only so many hours in the day? And do you mind sharing a little bit of insight into how you manage your time? You're on the road a lot.
So last year, because I was focusing so much on the kids and less on the jewelry, of course, like, my jewelry business went like more down. I mean, like, I always had my constant buyers.
Yeah.
So I always knew like that I get like orders in. So I also kind of like started becoming lazy because you know, you're like, oh, I know they're always going to order from me. So I didn't really need the money. I guess it's sometimes maybe even better if you need the money, because because then you work harder for it. So I kind of like got a little bit lazy regarding the jewelry. And then I focused more on the kids, because also with the kids, I don't know, it gave me more like happiness and personal fulfillment. But then like this year, some of our big clients, they didn't reorder again. So I was like, oh, damn, like, now I need to find like new clients again. Now I need to like refocus again on the jewelry as well. So now I got like a virtual assistant. And that was like one of the best things to do. So now I outsource stuff that I don't like to do that much myself. Again, it's like a nomadic job. I never ever met my virtual assistant in real life. We usually communicate through Slack with each other, but that's like, yes, super, super helpful. So especially with tasks that I don't really feel like doing or that I put away, I just give it to her like, hey, we need to prepare like a blog post or like a newsletter, or I need to get some stuff like filled out in Excel. And yeah, and then she just does everything for me. And then usually I still have to like recheck it or fill in some extra additional information. Mm-hmm. But it's already such a help if like half of the work is done and you kind of like just have to add on some stuff.
Brilliant. No, that's really, really helpful advice. Thank you. So tell us where people can find out more about you, your website, on social media, and also how much it costs if people want to sort of donate to the foundation.
Yeah, great. So I have turnitostars.com. That's the jewelry. And actually, if you go to that website, you obviously also will immediately find the foundation website. The foundation is foundation, turnitostars.org, socialvacation.com. I would say the most important is just remember turnitostars.com, and then from there you will find like links to the other sites. And on social media, on Instagram, it's my name, Stella underscore Airoldi. That's my personal Instagram. And in my bio, you find like, again, Instagram accounts for the foundation, the kids, and the social vacation. You can also just follow me on Facebook. Again, it's just my name. And then for the donation, we are really like happy with any amount. So yeah, you can make a one-time donation. You can sign up to become like a monthly sponsor with us. If you want to sponsor like a specific child long-term, that starts with 15 euro a month for the kindergarten kids and 20 euro a month for the primary school kids. And then goes up like, yeah, up to secondary school, boarding school.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you. Well, we'll definitely add all those links in the show as well for people to watch. But it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you, Stella, and hearing all about Songs of Stars and the foundation. And then I hope some people join you on the workation as well, because that's
brilliant. That would be really nice. Thank you.